Welcome back to the Brian Park Project from NPR News. We are always online at npr.org/Brian Park. It's time again. Come ye BPP listeners, gather round for a tale of all things mostifiable. Let's do the most. Mostifiable, it's a word.
Come ye. I like the old English.
Ye, yeah. Come ye listeners. Trisha McKinney.
Hello, I'm coming to ye from the control room. I have one of the most emailed stories at USA Today. It's actually an update on, remember those that tiger attack in the San Francisco Zoo back on Christmas Day? A young man was killed. He was with two friends, and they were there. They were found in the zoo after closing time. And it was later found that the tiger enclosure was 4 feet too short, shorter than standards. Anyway, so the update is the coroner this week just released a report after an autopsy of the teen who was killed. His name was Carlos Souza. And the toxicology report came out, and it turns out that Carlos Souza had some substances in his system. He had some marijuana in his system. But the lawyer for the victim's family says that that had nothing to do with the attack. But, so I was looking into that, and I saw there are a couple of updates. The family of this victim has filed a precursor of a lawsuit against the city of San Francisco. They did that early a couple of weeks ago. They're claiming unspecified monetary damages and a court injunction ordering the city to meet all minimum enclosure requirements recommended by the Zoo Association. So this has entered the court system. The other two victims of the attack who survived have also filed claims.
Remind me, I know he was there after hours, but do we remember, did the videotape show him going into the enclosure? Or did the tiger come out? Do you remember?
I honestly don't remember if there was videotapes. I know there were a lot of questions. There were 911 calls, and there were some questions about the response time of authorities to the claims of attack. And I know they were found a little bit farther away from the tiger enclosure. They were in like the food court area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trisha, thank you for that update on that story.
Sure.
Dan Pashman.
Hey, guys. I got a most emailed here from the New York Times science section. More interesting animal-related news. Same-sex parents in albatross colony. Yes, well, cooperative breeding is not uncommon in animal populations where animals assist in the care of offspring that aren't their own. But researchers in Hawaii, they've discovered a case that is a lot less common involving long-term pairs of unrelated birds of the same sex. Now, albatrosses are generally monogamous, and both parents participate in raising a single hatchling.
They're advanced.
They did this study, and one-third of the 125 pairs consisted of two unrelated females, and half of these stayed together for the duration of the study.
Huh.
So same-sex parenting in nature, pretty interesting. The albatross James Dobson was not available for comment.
That's funny. Penguins, a lot of same-sex parenting in penguins. They made a book about it. Tango. I interviewed Tango from Central Park once. And as much as people, point I always like to make, people say, see, it's only natural. We should also point out animals also do frequently eat their young. Laura.
Well, and teenagers frequently send nude photos of each other.
They do.
Of themselves to each other, according to the Columbus Dispatch. Nude photo sharing at school investigated. This is in Central Ohio, Mount Vernon. I'm not sure what their grass mowing policy is there. Mm. But apparently what started as a bullying complaint at a local school has turned into a police investigation of the school district because a lot of kids have photos of other kids in the buff.
On their screen?
So they
their cell phone screen. No, their cell phone. Oh. Their little screens.
So nudity through, bullying through nudity? How does that work?
Well, apparently some kids send nude photos of themselves to their exes or to people they'd like to be with.
So it's like bullying harassment. Tactic. It's like harassment is maybe a better word.
And these
bullying.
Get forwarded. Yeah, exactly. They called it bullying, but yeah, it's a new form, cyber cellular bullying.
Yeah. Weird.
But it's not the first time this happened in the area because this was reported in the middle of April by the Columbus Dispatch also. And it seems there's a rash of these photo exchanges. And under Ohio law, adults who send pornographic material to kids younger than 18 can be charged with a misdemeanor, but it's not clear what happens to minors.
They need to get these Ohio teens and get them on a grass mowing regimen because that instilled discipline in me, and I never bullied anyone with a nude photo. Caitlin.
All right.
All right, I did.
I've got a I've got a most emailed from the San Francisco Chronicle. Grandfather builds web browser for autistic boy. There's this man who lives in San Francisco, John Lasore. He's in the software business. And so he took particular interest when his six-year-old grandson, Zachary, who has autism, was so frustrated by using PCs that he threw the mouse. So he's tried to find online tools that would help his grandson be able to use the internet more effectively, and he couldn't really find anything, so he decided to build his own browser. He called it the Zach Browser, and it greatly simplifies the experience of using a computer. Hmm. Besides sealing off content you wouldn't want kids to see, it also essentially takes over the computer and reduces the controls. For example, it gets rid of extraneous keyboard buttons, turns off the right button on the mouse, and it also makes icons bigger, so they'll be like a large soccer ball for games or a stack of books for stories. So it's offering up for parents for free, and he's asking people to check it out, try to use it with their kids, and if they have any advice, send it on in.
That is amazing. So too much stimuli. That's the problem.
Right. Yeah, it turns off advertisements. It just basically turns off all those distractions.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Very interesting. Awesome. This has been a very illuminating most
today. I've enjoyed this one. Remember the sad most of yesterday?
I know, it's so sad.
God, I'm glad we've been able to rebound.
You know, the themes. I like the themes. Mm-hmm. Mark Garrison, joining us from the news booth.
Behind the glass. Thank you. I've got a number one most emailed from Yahoo News. We're in the public radio realm, but let's pretend we're in kind of local television news for all. So if we were doing this story, the way we would tease us would be probably something like this. Tonight at 6, an I-Team investigation when .com means .die.
Wait, is this a story?
Would you watch? Would you watch that?
Is this a story?
I would watch that. That's what we call a hook, a tease.
Is this a story that me and my family won't want to miss?
Exactly, exactly. So basically, they've done a survey looking at the different domain names, you know, .com, .org, .info, and found out which ones are most likely to have dangerous, not dangerous content, but dangerous technical stuff, you know, whether it's an email phishing scam or like excessive pop-ups or you know, possibly downloading Trojan horses. .hk, that's Hong Kong, .cn, China, or .info, that one sounded pretty innocuous, but nearly a fifth in the case of Hong Kong. A lot of them tend to be, ads, purporting to be pharmacies. You know, you get your cheap Viagra or cheap Prozac here, but generally you won't get drugs. You will get a lot of spam out of that. The safest, by the way, are .gov, .jp, and .au, which is Japan and Australia in the bottom of those two.
So very fascinating.
Surf all you want at the government websites.
Nice.
Matt Martinez wrapping
it up.
I have another fascinating one here. One of the most emailed at NPR.org, a story by David Kestenbaum about a man who's building a mini planet. It's a sphere about 10 feet across, and he plans to fill it with molten metal, and then he's going to spin it. And he's trying to solve a mystery. How does the Earth generate its magnetic field? Here's a story.
When you think about it, this is sort of an embarrassing gap in scientific knowledge. After all, the compass has been around since the 12th century, maybe longer. Something in the center of the Earth is generating the magnetic field, but it's been devilishly difficult to recreate in the lab. Dan Lathrop has been trying, though, and trying. He's a geophysicist at the University of Maryland and now the owner of a huge stainless steel orb. Steep stairs lead to the top. It looks like a prop from an old science fiction movie.
It's a strange thing, for sure. From one's imagination to 50 tons of stainless steel.
Scientists think they know how Earth makes its magnetic field. If you could dig a deep hole about 2,000 miles down, you would hit the outer core, which is made of liquid metal, probably liquid iron. That iron can conduct electricity, and if it flows in the right way, the Earth becomes what scientists call a dynamo. It generates a magnetic field, a North Pole up in Canada, another down in Antarctica. Over the years, Dan Lathrop has built bigger and bigger model planets. None made magnetic fields, but he figures it can't be that hard if you get the conditions right. Most planets in our solar system have magnetic fields.
It's clear that nature has an easy time making dynamos. Easier than I have, for sure. But planets have an advantage because of their size, and they're much more rapidly rotating in some measure. Santiago, shall we spin?
Guys, we are good to spin.
Lathrop says the first time they spun up this planet, it was a little scary. At top speed, the equator will fly by at 80 miles an hour. This may seem like an elaborate and hazardous way to answer a simple question, but Lathrop says you can't just drill down into the Earth to see what's going on.
The conditions of the core are more hostile than the surface of the Sun because it's as hot as the surface of the Sun, but under extremely high pressures, so there's no way to probe it, no imaginable technique to directly probe the core.
And the Earth's magnetic field is anything but simple. Seen over millions of years, it's a writhing, spitting thing.
It looks simple because it is moving slow compared to our day-to-day lives. But every time we go to measure it, it is different than it was before. The poles wandering about in Canada every year in a slightly different spot.
Right now, Lathrop's planet is filled with water. Eventually, his team will replace that with tons of molten sodium. Sodium is a metal. The idea is that it will mimic the molten iron churning in Earth's core. Sodium is great because it melts at stovetop temperatures and conducts electricity well, but it's also flammable. And if it catches fire, you can't just put it out with water. Water can make things worse. Lathrop's team has disabled the fire sprinklers. One time they had a small leak. Drops of sodium landed on a heater, producing tiny, molten, fiery blobs.
So we had about 15 fire trucks, and they were unable to put it out. It eventually put itself out.
Lathrop hopes when the experiment is up and running, his molten metal will behave like the real thing. The flow is likely to be complicated. With Earth, the whole system probably feeds on itself. The flow of iron generates the magnetic field, but that field can redirect the flow of iron, and on and on. The Earth's field has flipped directions, north to south to north back again, many times over the ages. The flow is probably a mix of chaos and order. You get a sense of that in this recording.
So you can hear the wave modes. They're not imaginary.
These are electromagnetic sputterings from one of Lathrop's smaller models, converted into sound.
That's the sound of turbulence.
That model planet sputtered but never quite came to life with its own magnetic field. Lathrop thinks he has a better chance, though, with his new 10-foot model. What if this doesn't work?
Well, then that will teach us something about when planets do and when planets don't generate a magnetic field.
Would you build a larger one?
I don't think so. You know, it took 7 years to build this one, and I'm a patient man, but not infinite patience.
Someone cuts the power, but the planet keeps turning for a while, stately, silent. Dan Lathrop hopes to get it running for real later this year.
That was NPR's David Kestenbaum reporting. You can find a link to that story and all the stories that you heard on The Most today. Go to our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.